Blazer Testing with B-Unit with Eagle Hansen.
The Azure DevOps Podcast is a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Each show brings you hard-hitting interviews with industry experts, innovating better methods, and sharing success stories. Listen on to learn how to increase quality, ship quickly, and operate well. And now your host, Jeffrey Palermo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Jeffrey Palermo, your host for helping you and your teams move fast, deliver quality, and run your software with confidence in Azure, all while using everything the .NET ecosystem has to offer. This podcast is sponsored by ClearMeasure, a software architecture company that empowers .NET teams to be self-sufficient and able to deliver world-class results. And they are hiring architects and .NET engineers who'd like a path to become an architect. So you can go to clearmeasure.com/careers. And finally, be sure to check out the new video show, Architect Tips. Now, as the guest on our show today, we have Eagle Hansen, and he's a principal developer at Delegate. He's also a Microsoft MVP, and he has a strong focus on creating maintainable software. He loves domain-driven design, test-driven development, Blazor, and clean code principles. So, Eagle, welcome to the show. How are you, sir?
Thank you, and thank you very much for having me.
Oh, my pleasure, my pleasure. Now, I understand you're, among other things, you created the B-Unit project, testing library for Blazor, and love to get into that. But for the listeners who didn't see you at .NET Conf or other speaking engagements, tell us about your background. What kind of led you into software and then specifically working on this technology?
Well, it's a long story, I guess, depending on how far back you go. But I started back in the early 2000s working and studying computer science. And then quickly after I started studying, I also started working. It's quite common, at least back then, that you sort of worked and studied part-time. And just fell in love with the whole process of developing and creating software and just writing code. And that, for me, it's like I can very easily get into that flow state and just keep adding, just solving one little problem and going to the next, and it's like the puzzle of the good book you can't put down. So it's something that just speaks very nice to the way I work, my mentality, like that whole coding exploration thing and the whole creative process around that, definitely. So that's sort of, I guess, my motivation for doing all this, and I've been going through, starting with just HTML and CSS, and then PHP, and then .NET and SharePoint, and I even took a detour and worked in a bank in Denmark and on IBM mainframes and coded in PL1 and DB2 and in the big transaction systems you have there, where you can really do some quite amazing stuff. And now, you know, I'm at Delegate, and it's a great Microsoft-focused consultancy house where we build a custom solution on Asia, primarily using the latest technology from that ecosystem and obviously the latest versions of .NET. So it's super fun, and we get to do a lot of interesting things. Did that answer your question?
It did. Yeah, absolutely. Good. Absolutely. And something led you to take notice of Blazor and create a testing framework, which is now, you know, getting pretty widespread attention. What specifically caused you to say, you know what, hey, Blazor's kind of interesting. I want to lean into this.
Yeah. So back in 2019, I had a little bit of free time. My family and I were moving to Iceland, and I had some time off from work there. And I think I saw Steve Sanderson, a presentation. I think like most people excited about Blazor around that time did, and thought, I'm going to try to build my own a bootstrap component library like everybody else was also trying to do at that time. And as you mentioned, and when you read my sort of small intro there, bio, I one of the ways I could get into sort of a good flow state is by doing test driven development. And around that time, there were no options of really like testing the logic of your components when you were building things that were more like had some logic into them. It's not just putting out markup on the screen, but had some logic. And so I started hacking something together around that time, May, April, 2019, and that sort of became the foundation for BUnit. Steve Sanderson as well. He also sort of saw that there was missing something from the community. So he also came out with a prototype for like very basic prototype of how you could actually test your components with like an unit test kind of approach to it. I still think he has a blog post around that. This is his prototype then. And I looked at that, and then I, you know, took all of the good stuff he had in there and combined it with what I had. And then that really accelerated a few things. There were definitely, especially back then, there were some insights into how the deeper workings of Blazor, that I didn't have. And his prototype really solved a lot of that. So that helped a lot also bring BUnit to where it is today. But a lot of things have been added ever since, and you know, it's been a fun ride. But also, I have to keep up with the cadence of the Blazor team. They release, you know, once a year, and I at least have to make sure that BUnit still works from what was it, the first release to .NET 5 and now .NET 6. I'm happy to say that most of the things I've built still works, and I didn't have to do a lot actually to make it work with .NET 6. Because the Blazor team was actually pretty great. They have some internal but public APIs that I have to kind of hook into and build upon to make BUnit work. But you know, they managed to not break them, even though they are sort of pop kernel. So that was great. So I didn't have a lot to do, but there was still some few things there. So it's been a fun process, but I never really got back to my own Bootstrap component library because it took so much time to build that testing framework. It's still sitting there somewhere.
The way I describe BUnit is it's not a testing framework.
Oh, yeah, of course.
We have XUnit, we have InUnit, just for the listeners who are kind of like, what is this thing? The way I think of it, and I want to hear how you think of it, is it's not a testing framework, even though I think we ended up calling it that, but use it with InUnit or XUnit, and it's an adapter to be able to test Blazor components. That's how I think of it. But how do you describe what BUnit is?
You are actually right. I misspoke before. It is a library. And I actually, if you see my .NET Conf presentation from a few weeks back, I actually make a point of highlighting that in my second slide, that it's a library that you add on top of your existing testing framework or testing project that you have. And if you like InUnit or you like XUnit or MS Test, or you have a there are a few others more esoteric testing frameworks out there, but if it's just a basically a library that allows you to render a Blazor component, and when and how you want to invoke that BUnit test context that allows you to do that, well, that's up to you and how your testing framework wants you to do that thing. So, but most people, I believe, will use it with XUnit or InUnit, which are the most common testing frameworks we have in the .NET ecosystem right now.
Mm-hmm. And testing UI code has always been tricky. And in the past, for Windows applications, there was this popular library called Wite that was used for WinForms, and then Selenium for web. But those things, you had to run the full application, and it's always been tricky to say run a unit test for UI code, but BUnit seems to accomplish this. How talk about your thought process when putting this together?
Yes, so that takes us back to the core architecture of Blazor. So Blazor allows you to do well. Blazor, the component model there, you write a component, but the component itself doesn't know how to translate. The component itself doesn't generate markup. You have a renderer, and in Blazor, when we run it in the browser, we have a it's called a browser render, that takes that, well, that takes that component tree or that markup, that render builder tree that is generated, that render fragment that you sort of whole construct of render fragments that you that sort of together becomes a render tree and traverses down through that and then generates something on the other side. But that separation of concerns we have in the architecture between the components and the output they produce, that is what allows me to basically hook into that process, build on top of that, but instead of, you know, having to run a browser to actually output the results from rendering a component, well, we can capture that result and put it into some in-memory representations of a DOM tree, a document object model from the browser, but now we can interrogate it just in C#. So the ability to do this is sort of the genius around the architecture in Palacia and that separation we have between the rendering pipeline and the component model and the output, what the output looks like. That's also why we have, at least, I don't think it's still really in the works, but there was the Blazor mobile bindings that were able to take the Blazor component model and output a SAML instead of HTML. And sort of, so you can see sort of where you can plug it in. I also think Steve Sampson had a sample application at some point where he would spit out, Dart? No, not Dart, but the UI library that Google has on top of Dart, that he was able to generate, you know, generate Dart markup on top of from Blazor. So BUnit is just sort of another custom render target on top of that. And what I do then when you have an HTML-based component that you want to test, well, I take that HTML-based component and render that into just a string representation where we have the raw markup. And then I also have, I use another great library called AngleSharp, a C# HTML5, an implementation in C# of the HTML5 specs. So basically you have all the methods that you know from the browser. So you can use that to query a document object model that represents HTML5. And so we take the output from the component and put it into AngleSharp, and then we can query it and we can interrogate it. So, and because it's everything running in C#, and because I have fairly deep hooks into the Blazor renderer, which I have sort of built a BUnit test renderer that inherits from that and builds on top of that, a lot of the asynchronous nature of a UI where you click something and then you have to wait for something else to happen, which is a typical problem we have with UI testing, because that waiting is something where you, at a primitive level, you have to just ask it, wait a little bit and ask, are you done yet? And when you ask and you wait and you ask again, are you done yet? And so on and so forth. And that can lead to instability, because maybe you missed that window where that thing was shown, because it was only shown for like half a second, then it's gone again. And then you didn't actually see it before it went away. Because I have these deep hooks into the Blazor renderer, I can actually guarantee that even in when you have asynchronous code running in your Blazor components, that you will have a chance to inspect the markup after every render if you have that. And that leads to tests that run very fast and tests that are usually quite easy to write, and also tests that behave a lot like just regular unit tests. Obviously, if you have something asynchronous, you have there's a few extra commands you need to work around, so you can say, I want to wait for this thing to happen, or wait for this element to show up, or wait for this state to show up, but then you get a chance to react. And so that's sort of the difference between the new mentioned Selenium before, or I think Playwright is sort of a newer version of that from Microsoft, but it's still something where you spin up a browser and you have to instrument the browser and you have to be a little bit careful about waiting for the right stuff and getting the asynchronous timings going correctly. So you don't really have that problem with BUnit in the same way. So there's still some corner cases, obviously, that always is. But for the most part, I've tried to design it after philosophy that it should just work. Like you as a BUnit user should sort of fall into that pit of success where if you sort of write your tests like you would write your normal unit tests, then things sort of fall into place quite nicely for you.
Many thanks to our podcast sponsor, Clear Measure. ClearMeasure is a software architecture company that empowers clients' development teams to be self-sufficient, moving fast, delivering quality, and running their systems with confidence. Whether starting a new project or developing new technologies or techniques, ClearMeasure sets up your team to deliver world-class results. Learn more at www.clearmeasure.com. ClearMeasure, empowering software delivery.
Yeah, yeah. And I've used it on a number of projects, and it just, yeah, it does fall into place. One of the things, like your philosophy on component decomposition, because that unit is in the name, and we're going for unit testing in the user interface. So, of course, the question is, what is a unit? And, you know, the counter component in the Blazor template. Mm. Okay, that's simple. You press a button and it increments a number. How hard? But in real applications that have screens with lots of stuff on them, what's your approach to decomposition so that you don't run into difficulty with testing it?
So I so from my bio, it actually said I like clean code principles. I think maybe I should update that now and say I really just like the principle of writing simple code. And the same thing applies for me when I'm writing Blazor components. So I think a common thing that we end up is that we end up with Blazor components where the markup portion is like you can even see hundreds of lines of code of markup in your Razor file, because you add more table, you add more markup in there because it's like very compositional. It feels very natural. But at some point, you have a component that has a fairly generic name or like a something that maybe not describes everything that goes on there within the markup. And my approach to creating both maintainable but also testable components, and those two things go hand in hand, I believe, is that you try to actually refactor your components a bit and extract things into, you know, char components that have a good name that represent what's going on there. So, in the extreme case, you might actually have a, if you have sort of a parent-child kind of hierarchy in a component where you have maybe a table and then you have a number of rows you want to print out. Well, maybe if that content of that item in the row is, there's some fairly complex things going on, I want to render it in a different way depending on the input data. Well, make a row component and just have, so then your outer component becomes just the shell of that table, and then you have it for each over your data, and you render a row component inside of that. And that also makes it easy to test, because then you can write a test now where you test the row component and where you pass in a single item. And then you can test your outer component, your table component that uses the row component. But instead of testing, well, how would you test the table component? Well, you will pass in one item, zero items, and 10 items, I don't know, 50 items. Well, when do you stop, right? So what you instead do is, instead of verifying that when I pass in five items, I get five rows that have the right content in each of the rows, you're basically doing double work. So instead you can use the feature where you sort of work on both the DOM tree, which is the document object, the markup, and then you work on the render tree in Beamit, where you ask your table component, give me all the components of, I guess that component would be called a row component. And then you can basically just look at that row component and say, did I assign the right value to that row component? Did I assign the right data to that component? And because you already have a test that verifies that the row component is doing the right thing, then you don't need to verify the markup produced by a row component in the context of a table component. So I like splitting them up and actually having fairly short components, similar to, like, you wouldn't have a 400 line method or even class in C sharp, right? You would usually split them up. So I like to take that approach, and I don't want to cite the SOTY principle because it's overkill in many ways. And I just like the, if you just learn to write simple code and just say, well, does this component work in different abstractions levels? Do we have multiple things going on here? Well, maybe pull it out and give it a good name, similar to like you would refactor a method and pulling out bits of piece of it because it's getting too hard to understand what's going on in that method. So the similar, I have a similar approach to my components, and then I test the components individually, and then I test their composition, like what data I'm passing back and forth between them. So I don't really test the markup twice in different contexts.
That's good. Yeah, object-oriented programming, you never have objects too small, it seems. You can always break it down one more level if you find a name for it.
And usually that, to some degree at least, that helps with with your maintainability and your ability to understand your own code a few weeks later.
So layout components. Talk about that, because we have components that can be broken up, but then we have this one layout component that kind of orchestrates the structure of a particular screen. How is that different, or is it?
Well, in Blazor, I think people, when they just look at Blazor from a UI point of view, they have page components, they have layout components, and then they have components, I guess. But from Beamwood's point of view and from Blazor's point of view, it's really just the same. They have layout components have a different base class they inherit from, but when you get back to the basics of it, it's just an I component, which is the basic interface that all components need to implement. And the same with pages. It's just a regular component with a page attribute on it. And that also means that from Beamwood's point of view, it's just a component, and you can test the layout component if that is important to you. Usually, I think layout components doesn't have a lot of logic, like component logic, and then you can argue, well, do I need to test that? If you do, Beamwood actually has something built into it, which I still think is unique to the front end testing. Scene, I want to say, but in general, to like React and similar testing libraries ecosystems, Beunit has something called it's an addition I built on top of AngleSharp called AngleSharp Diffing, and it's a semantic HTML comparer. So it understands that two snippets of HTML can actually be different if you do a strict string comparison of the two, but if you view them in the browser will render them the same. They will look the same. Like we have insignificant white space, we have attribute order, doesn't matter on an element. We have even the order of the classes in the class attribute on an element doesn't matter for how things work, right? And there's things around, maybe you have the required attribute, but sometimes you can write a required equals required or required. So that's all sort of corner cases where if you go into your Visual Studio and hit Control K, KD to reformat the document, if you just had an assertion based on a string comparison of the markup in your test and the markup produced by component, your test would start failing because you changed some white space. And with that semantic comparer that is built into Beunit, then you don't have those problems. And you even have some modifiers you can add on top of your expected markup to say, ignore this part of the DOM tree or this attribute, use this regex to compare the content of that because maybe it's a generated ID, for example. So that gives you the ability to, again, create tests that don't break when they shouldn't need to, even though you are actually doing markup comparison, which is historically very unstable because it basically takes a single white space that doesn't matter to the output the user sees, but it's super unstable. But now you are actually able to do that kind of test if it's really important for your UI that the markup has the right structure, I guess. So if you have a designer, which is fairly typical in bigger projects, you have a UI designer that's decided that this is the markup we want with this CSS. Well, now you can actually say, well, I'm going to write a test that verifies that this markup does the component produces exactly this markup, so we don't run into any issues, regressions down the line.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, what is your thought process on component interaction, where a component on the left side of the screen, if you click on it, well, maybe something on the right side of the screen needs to change?
Mm-hmm. So state management, I guess. I think it's from Beamwood's point of view, you can do whatever you prefer. So it's from a testing point of view, there's no real difference. Like if you use services to coordinate or you use cascading values or some other, you know, base component they all inherit from and talk through. All of those things will work with BUnit in a sort of Blazor design, if we go up to that level and look at it from that angle. I like the Fluxor pattern, the more functional approach to if it's a more complex application. If it's a simple thing like a small dashboard, then just, you know, hook it up with cascading values or something like a service or something. But if it's something more complex, I would probably use cascading values if it's something simple, because that will also re-render for you when things change. But if it's like a more complex UI, I would look at something like, I think there's a component library called Blazor State, and there's also another one called Fluxor, which are two Blazor specific implementation of the Flux UI design pattern from, I think it originated from Facebook, but it's quite popular, especially in the React world. And both of those libraries also work with the DevTools experience that you can get for the Fluxor pattern from React, so you can sort of see the state. But that is sort of a way that makes it easy to understand how state flows through the application, because it otherwise it can get quite complex, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, when you first started Blazor, all we were talking about, I think, at the time was server side, and then WebAssembly was kind of coming up, and now we're talking about Blazor desktop, and then in the spring we're talking about Blazor embedded into MAUI applications for iOS and Android. Where do you see the Blazor project going?
I still think the base will be for on the net for web applications, but it's also great that we will have an easy path to take that same code and really apply that to different platforms. And I, you know, also just on the Teams client, for example, there's lots of different avenues for Blazor to be used in. And I think that's pretty great. And I'm also excited to hear that Microsoft internally started using it more and more in their own projects internally. And that's, I think, something that has started to change in the last year or so, obviously, because there was a lot of, you know, it takes a while for a product team to pick up a new technology and maybe move from Angular, React, or whatever they were using internally before that. So that also gives me some hope for the future. I don't necessarily see. I think Blazor is a technology like any else where we need to evaluate it and see, does it fit my specific thing? Like, there is some overhead, but there's also some advantages. So should I use React or should I use a native iOS application approach to developing this thing? I think it's not a problem looking for a solution. It's not a solution looking for a problem. It is actually a good solution for quite a few problems now. So I think it's just great that we get more and more options. And again, we see the strength of the Blazor architecture that it's able to just fit in so many places.
Yeah. Well, pivoting just briefly from BUnit, one of the other items that you focus on is domain-driven design. And I just wanted to ask you about that because Eric Evans wrote the DDD book, 15 years ago? Or it was
2004, I think, something like that.
Yeah, so yeah. 16, 17 years ago. And you know, I've read the book cover to cover, but I'll admit a lot of it's dry. But yet some of the concepts have endured, while at the same time, I think when I talk to people, a smaller subset have actually read the whole book. So how do you summarize it? When you say, oh, I like DDD, what is it that you're thinking about when you say, oh, I like it, it's good?
I've been a consultant for like, I guess I'm going on 7 years now. And that, for me, the DDD, you know, like I think, like most people, I fell into that. I read the I think the first part of the book where you learn about all the implementation patterns, but where I really started seeing the value was when I learned about the other parts, where you learn how to speak the customer's language. You learn to divide things up again. You know, principle of simple. And being able to take a very complex business domain and actually be able to to have it mentally in your head and work with that, and working with the concept of bounded context and understanding when to split things up into different contexts and sort of understand the compromises that you have going back and forth. And also recently, I guess it was 4 years ago when event storming started to become a thing, and trying that out and sort of having that connection of standing with a customer at a whiteboard and sort of exploding out that whole business domain and getting into the details, having them engage in a different way because you have that DDD approach to talking to the customer and having the customer have much more ownership of a product and be much more engaged with it and sort of almost you see the light in their eyes go off when we talk about back and forth about things and for me that's the great stuff that's what I really love about it and obviously I also love sitting down and actually typing out the code afterwards and trying to sort of use that ubiquitous language of DDD to sort of get the aggregates and get my entities and value objects value types into the code and see that come to life there as well.
Awesome. Yeah, so important to have that ubiquitous language that we're not making up things in the software, that we're actually just harvesting the terms of the actual business.
And I think anybody who's tried to practice DDD a little bit with the customer will also experience that even within a customer, within a single, like it's just a small part of an organization, they don't have a ubiquitous language. They use the same word for this. They use different words for the same thing, and sometimes use the same word for many different things as well. And going through that exploration process with them and helping them also establish it doesn't always end up being a complete ubiquitous language like we as developers like to have it, but certainly also seeing them sort of getting to sort of that understanding that this actually also helps us in our daily lives. That's a fun experience as well.
Awesome. Well, Eagle, thanks for coming on the show today and talking about BUnit and diving into that. We'll definitely include the link to the GitHub repository because it is an open source project, an open source library there. Besides that, how can people find you and get in touch with you?
So I think that the one primary right now is on Twitter. I'm at Eagle Hansen, so my full name. Obviously, you can find me through GitHub as well. I also try to stream weekly on Twitch. So if you find me on Twitter, you can find my Twitch stream. And that's a good place if you want to sort of have some live support on BUnit, or want to come in and ask questions or watch me work on BUnit or other open source stuff I'm working on. That's a good place to come and hang out and say hi. It's in a UTC time zone around 1:30 p.m., so it's not super friendly to everybody in the entire world, but you can always use the recordings afterwards. So that's a good place. Otherwise, feel free to reach out on Twitter. I'll be happy to answer questions and help out if there's anything I can help with.
Okay. And that's at EGILHANSEN.
Yes. Thank you for spelling that out.
We'll include the other links in the show notes as well for everybody. So. Awesome. Well, thank you again, Eagle. This is a great, great conversation.
Thank you very much for having me.
And until next time, keep shipping.
You've been listening to the Azure DevOps Podcast, a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Go to www.azuredevops.show for show notes and other episodes. On behalf of your host, Jeffrey Palermo, and our sponsors, thanks for listening, and may God bless you.